You're back on Green Left Radio on 3CR, and it's time for our first interview with Kristen O'Connell, who is a spokesperson for the Anti-Poverty Centre, and she's been campaigning to raise the job seeker rate. Welcome to the show, Kristen.
Hi, Chloe. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for taking the time. Just to start off, Kristen, for people who don't know how difficult it is to survive on JobSeeker and other payments, would you just be able to give a quick overview of how people are surviving right now during a cost of living crisis?
Yeah. I guess the first thing to say is lots of people aren't. There's a lot of specifics I can give, but I think people need to understand the significance of this, and people like myself who are quite active in our communities are receiving requests for support from more and more people who feel that suicide is their only option. People feel that the government would prefer them dead. People are self-harming and people are being admitted to psych wards. So that's what we're seeing, and every time the government says something that exposes how cruel and heartless their policies are and the fact that they have no intention of changing them, that increases. So people are falling behind on bills. People are losing homes. We need to see eviction moratoriums back, right? We did it a couple of years ago. And, of course, all of us, the first thing we cut from our budget is food. So I want to be really clear too. JobSeeker is a very low payment. Youth allowance is even lower. But none of the working age payments are below, are above the poverty line. So all of us are feeling this.
And Kristen, thanks for being on our program. And I guess the next kind of question I kind of wanted to ask is, you know, how many, I want to kind of hear, I guess, about, you know, how many people are kind of being affected, I guess, and who is at risk, who is at greater risk of living in poverty, and especially in terms of the most vulnerable kind of groups? Because migrant workers and refugees on temporary visas are not even necessarily eligible for a job seeker.
That's right. And they're not the only people who aren't eligible. So again, in 2020, we got a really good demonstration of this when international students were excluded from financial support. There are certain visa types, yes. There are also other eligibility restrictions on payments. So partner income tests mean that people get trapped in violent homes. Parental income tests, again, for people on youth allowance mean people get trapped in violent homes. And I mean also the rate of payments themselves, even if people could technically get a payment, it's not necessarily enough to escape a violent home. So particularly young queer people struggle. And as you say, lots of people are excluded based on their visa status. So when we talk about that, though, I think it's really important. So we always say, you know, we need to have every Centrelink payment above the poverty line and payments available to every person who needs one. Who's on this continent. And so I think we try to stay away from that idea of who's more or less vulnerable. It's been a big conversation this week because the government's decided to frame older women as the most vulnerable. There are so many factors that affect our ability to survive on these extremely low incomes, and they intersect, and it's really hard to kind of pick one group. But, yeah, there are quite a lot of different examples.
Kristen, can you tell us about the Anti-Poverty Centre?
Yeah, thank you. So we're a group of welfare recipients. We established the Anti-Poverty Centre a couple of years ago, feeling extreme frustration at the poverty industrial complex and the failure, decades of failure from the paid advocates to do anything to make our lives better. And in fact, many of the things that they've done seem to have allowed governments to go backwards on welfare policy and make our lives worse. And tired of being talked down to and spoken over by those paid advocates who don't understand our lives at all. So the Anti-Poverty Centre, we believe that the experts, the people who live it, that we have really sophisticated approaches to take and to put forward on policy. And we are the most compelling people to talk about poverty because we understand it. And many other things. So we just sort of try to push back against that idea of the, like, professional, political and media class who all profit from poverty and none of whom have succeeded in changing it, whether they are trying to or not.
Yeah. So when the ALP were in opposition, Albanese said the job seeker rate was unlivable and that nobody can live on $40 a day. Well, apparently that fact is actually even worse now when you consider the current kind of rate of inflation. Mm. And can we talk a bit about the ALP's track record on this question of job seeker and raising the rate?
Well, I think the last time that Labor was in government and a rate increase happened was in 1994, and it was about $2.50. Can't remember if it was $2.50 a day or $2.50 a week, because back then prices were a little different. But that's the last time Labor increased the basic unemployment payment. Last time Labor were in government, the gap between the rate of New Start, which is now called JobSeeker, and the poverty line dramatically widened. So it widened faster than it had under Howard. We now have got a situation where the government's trying to divide people up and give basically nothing to older women, just to sort of try and assuage people and get everyone to calm down, because they really haven't understood how much the community recognises how deep the need is. And there are those extraordinary spending items that they're doing. There are the hundreds of billions of dollars they're putting into tax cuts. Half $1 trillion, I think we're up to now with AUKUS, with the little add-on they did a few weeks after the initial announcement. And when we're just putting those, like, going back to those tax cuts, we are hearing more and more over the last few weeks from people who are saying, I will benefit from these tax cuts. I will benefit a lot from these tax cuts. And I don't want them, because I don't want them when I can see so many people who need help more than I do. People understand what is going on, and the government has really miscalculated that. I don't feel optimistic about the budget, but at some point something's got to break, because Labor's record on this has been terrible, but people have had enough. They're sick of hearing no one left behind and looking at the millions of people around them who are being left behind.
Yeah, there is no bad time to lift millions out of poverty, and mm-hmm. Labor government is just choosing not to do it. Kristen, you were recently involved in a Raise the Rate protest outside of Anthony Albanese's electorate office, and we covered this as part of an article in Green Left. Can you just remind us how long, well, you've given us a good explanation as to when, it's been, decades since Labor raised the rate, but how long have welfare recipients and anti-poverty activists actually been campaigning to raise the rate, and how can other people help in the fight and support this campaign?
There is an incredibly rich legacy of unemployed workers, you know, mobilising and doing activism on this continent going back, where are we now? Yeah, over 100 years at least. So there's a long lineage of people fighting for the rights of unemployed workers. So I feel like I'm a very recent addition to this movement. I began campaigning myself in early 2020, right before the pandemic hit us, right after I managed to successfully conclude my application for the disability support pension, and I suddenly had a little bit more energy. And that meant I was able to get in touch with the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, which I had been watching and admiring for some time when I wasn't doing particularly well. And the folks there have established in 2014, primarily around opposing the sickening and brutal mutual obligations regime, have been organising against that since 2014 in that organisation. There's the Anti-Poverty Network down in South Australia. I'm not sure when they established, actually. But the point is, people have been doing grassroots organising on this issue for a long time. I think that the more cruel the system gets, both the harder it gets to resist it, but the more people who do decide that they can't go on without resisting it, right? And so this campaign, I think the actual official, you know, branded Raise the Rate campaign has been going, it's been going for probably nearly a decade, right? It's not been very successful, which is why we want to try and do things differently and have people in poverty, people who survived in the welfare system, people who need access to welfare but can't get it, leading and allowing ourselves to have you know, more confidence, to feel more entitled to the space in this conversation, so that people can see we're real, right? Like, I think we get treated as one-dimensional in the media, and there's this very othering process that happens with the way we talk about poverty and welfare recipients in this country, and that's what we want to change. We want to do all of that work to transform people's understanding of not only what we're capable of, but also what we're worthy of.
Before I guess we kind of wrap up this interview, is there anything else you would like listeners to know? And actually, one thing we would probably be interested in hearing you comment on, because we've been talking about raise the whole question around raising kind of job seeker, but do you kind of also want to kind of comment that about the other some of the other issues that connect to the work that the Anti-Poverty Centre do, and also, you know, other kind of issue, and also connect to this campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I missed part of your question earlier as well when you said how can people participate. We've also done quite a bit of work around the terrible housing fund bill that the government has put forward, which is seeking to further financialise the way that we do housing in this country. We think there's two key things that would really fundamentally shift not just the lives of people in poverty and not just the lives of those on welfare, but everyone on low incomes, which is every payment above the poverty line, a sophisticated measure of poverty. So we don't have a very good measure of poverty right now. We need to do a lot of work. We need this triage measure of take the poverty line we have, the Henderson poverty line, it's about $611 a week, get everyone to that level. Then we can do the work of understanding poverty better, have an independent body similar to how we have the RBA or the Fair Work Commission, independent of government making decisions that affect the economy, an independent body to set payment rates based on a new measure of poverty. And, of course, high-quality, beautiful public homes available to everyone who wants them, not just targeted to the group of people who's seen as the most needy, which leads to something we call residualization. It's a very wonky term for basically saying you put a whole lot of really vulnerable and high-needs people together because they're deemed, you know, the most desperate into public housing or into community housing. Not enough, not adequate support, not adequate maintenance, and no resourcing because only the lowest income people are in these properties. There's no rents coming in from higher income people to sustain the system and to fund that maintenance. So those are the two key things I think would really transform where we're at. In terms of folks getting involved right now, people would be aware it's budget next week. The government has been flailing around trying to respond to public pressure by throwing bits and pieces out to see how people will feel and react. If you go to the Anti-Poverty Centre Twitter or Facebook, hopefully it should be up there. We've got a letter writing tool where you can just pop in your postcode. You can write whatever you want. We haven't done a pro forma. Send that to your MPs, because normally we would say to people, not necessarily prioritise that type of action, but with the amount of movement we've seen from the government over the past couple of weeks on welfare, we think it is worth just giving that last final push to your MP to say, hey, this really is significant and we will not tolerate small changes like giving over 55s an extra $25 a week. We need every person above the poverty line.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Christine. I think this has been a very good interview. And I think, yeah, I think ahead of the budget, I think it will be important for people to kind of put as much pressure on the Labor Party. I mean, the fact that probably what is significant, just to make a bit of a comment here, it is significant that probably a number of Labor MPs have kind of signed, I guess, an open letter, putting kind of pressure on Albanese. Of course, it's not like I wouldn't want to exaggerate. It's like a big sort of rebellion, because it's like, it's probably like 10 to 15 Labor MPs out of 100. Yeah. But I do think I think it's also a testament to, you know, the work that anti-poverty campaigners have been doing consistently, on the issue. And in fact, you know, as someone who got involved in activism around 2013, they've never been these many sort of groups and activists kind of organising around the issue. And so I think, you know, we've got to continue to kind of keep building the movement, keep getting more activists involved, because I think, you know, this issue is not going to go away, especially in terms of the cost of living crisis that we're living under.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ruth.